Good morning, and welcome to Island Assignment, WALK's award-winning weekly feature that looks at issues and challenges affecting listeners on Long Island.
Is your home equipped with carbon monoxide detectors? That's the question many Long Islanders asked each other just a few months ago when we all heard of the tragic death of a restaurant manager at the Walt Whitman Mall from carbon monoxide poisoning. Before that, commercial buildings weren't required to have CO detectors. That's changing, though, with new laws and more awareness of the danger. On our show today, we decided to find out more about these new laws and how to protect ourselves from carbon monoxide, which is also known as the silent killer. One person who can answer all our questions is Bob Williams. He's the president of Briscoe Protective Systems, a company located in Center Reach. We have Bob on the phone right now. Thanks for taking some time for us this morning.
Oh, you're quite welcome, Deb.
We're going to start off with an easy question for you first, and it's one that's easy for you to answer, but maybe not so much for us. Tell us, what is carbon monoxide?
Well, Donna, carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless, tasteless, and initially non-irritating, but potentially lethal gas. I more consider it a poison, produced by incomplete combustion of either liquid, solid, or gaseous fuels. CO could be produced from any furnace fired by fuel, as well as even wood stoves or kerosene heaters, gas stoves, and even fireplaces.
Most of us know that carbon monoxide is a gas, but you call it a poison, and that's probably important for us to remember, right?
Yes, because in the regular cycle of combustion, carbon monoxide is produced by incomplete combustion. So normally what will happen is if you have a gas furnace or a hot water heater or a fireplace, you'll have a chimney or exhaust vent that will bring the exhaust gases above your regular height and go into the atmosphere. However, if those exhaust vehicles are clogged in any way, the incomplete combustion will come back into the resident or into the business in the form of carbon monoxide.
So when we hear about a building where there's been a carbon monoxide leak, as it's often called, and levels are dangerously high, the source, it sounds like, usually is a faulty heating system.
Yes, it usually is a faulty heating system, either a hot water heater, which can go on at any time, or a furnace. And that's why most carbon monoxide instances happen during the winter, when the heating systems are usually going in in full blast.
So why is carbon monoxide so dangerous?
Well, the reason it's dangerous is if you understand the chemistry of carbon monoxide and how our body works. What happens when we take a breath, the hemoglobin, which is the protein on red blood cells, they absorb the oxygen. And that oxygen is transmitted to each individual part of our body and allows us to function normally. It goes to our brain, it goes to all our organs. If somebody is pregnant, it goes into the baby's womb. And what happens is when we get carbon monoxide in the atmosphere, carbon monoxide is 300 times more likely to stick to this hemoglobin than oxygen. So what happens is the body's cells and the body's tissues and the body's organs are deprived of oxygen, and instead carbon monoxide is in the body.
So carbon monoxide is crowding out the oxygen that you need to survive.
It is. And it's dangerous. That's why I don't call it a gas. I call it a poison, because there's no real good reason to have carbon monoxide in and around your workplace or your home.
So why do they call it the silent killer?
Because it's colorless and odorless, it's much different. When I was a firefighter, we went into a fire, we could smell a fire, we could feel the heat, we could see the smoke. But with carbon monoxide, it's colorless, it's odorless, and in initial stages, it's very non-irritating. That's why the initial symptoms, Donna, are like flu-like symptoms. And you can think, especially in the wintertime, that you're having a flu. You can have a headache, nausea, And as the carbon monoxide poisoning gets greater, you'll have much greater instances of it. And you'll get vomiting. You'll have very much heart difficulty breathing. And you'll get mental confusion. But at its early stages, it's very much like a flu.
Now, before we go any further, we should probably explain why you and your staff at your company know so much about carbon monoxide. You just, in fact, mentioned that you were a firefighter.
Yes, I responded to many CO alarms, especially in residential environments. And a lot of times somebody would call that they weren't feeling well, or one or two people in the family weren't feeling well when they went in the basement. And then we go and investigate, and we take our meters out. If we discovered anything, carbon monoxide is measured in parts per million of air. So if we discovered 5 parts per million or greater, you know, we would mask up, first of all, and then we would, you know, tell the residents they would have to leave until we determined what the cause of the carbon monoxide leak was. And a lot of times this was difficult for the residents to do or to even comprehend, even though they called us, because they didn't want to be displaced from their home in the middle of a cold evening or anything like that. As a matter of fact, one time we had to call the Suffolk County Police Department if they wouldn't leave. And we did wind up finding a clogged furnace flute. So that's how difficult it is for people who even report a CO condition to understand all the ramification of it. They don't know because they don't have the meters or different technology on site, especially at that time. As a matter of fact, right now, if the way fire departments work in Suffolk and Nassau County, if a CO alarm is called in by a resident, they immediately mask up before they go into these locations.
So as a firefighter, you had plenty of firsthand experience with carbon monoxide situations. Your staff, they're also trained in this?
Yes. Well, you know, as part of many of the rules and regulations that are coming to the forefront in New York State, especially after Amanda Hansen from Buffalo, who in 2009 was sleeping over a girlfriend's house in the basement, and she passed because of carbon monoxide poisoning. The awareness of carbon monoxide is very prevalent in New York and in our industry, and we look for the signs even in our own building that we have of carbon monoxide poisoning, because it can be, as I said, relatively in its early stages like flu-like symptoms.
During our show today, we're going to have you explain to us some of the laws regarding carbon monoxide detection. Those laws are under scrutiny right now, especially here on Long Island, because of the recent death of a restaurant manager at the Walt Whitman Mall. I'm sure you know all about that incident. Can you explain to us what exactly happened there?
Yes, there's actually, you know, there's two different scenarios, Donna, and they're both very important. Stephen Nelson unfortunately passed in the winter in February at Legal Seafoods in Huntington. He passed, but also some of his staff and responding firefighters were overcome by CO that was on the premise. But if you would listen to the news forecast reports and everything, you would think it was an incident of what we call acute poisoning, or poisoning that happened within a 24-hour period. However, what actually happened, some of the legislators in Suffolk County passed the Steve Nelson Safety Act. I know Legislator Kennedy was very instrumental in getting it passed. And John Jamison, who was Steve Nelson's partner, spoke at the press conference that happened about 2 weeks ago. And he detailed how Steve was sick for a few weeks prior to this with flu-like symptoms and shortness of breath. And he even went to the doctors, and they couldn't determine what it was. So I believe that Steve was poisoned over a period of time, and that's called chronic CO poisoning. And that's something that, you know, I am very sensitive to, and I try to make people aware of in the device selection that they use to put in their premise, both in residential and commercial buildings. So it wasn't just that incident that happened that day, but it was the events leading up to it. It was eventual poisoning over a long period of time. And especially, Donna, in restaurants where usually they don't have offices, the manager's office is usually near the kitchen, which has the burner and the hot water heater that's used for the dishes and cleaning and stuff like that. They can be particularly susceptible to chronic CO poisoning, which is CO poisoning over an extended period of time.
Interesting. And you pointed out earlier the story of the girl upstate who died while sleeping in a basement. Basement is another place where there's often a furnace, the heating system, so that's probably how she was exposed, being in that part of the house, right?
Yeah, it's definitely the case, and that started to bring it into prominence in New York State. The other earliest recognition of CO poisoning happened in the Hamptons with tennis star Vitas Gerulaitis. It was in, I think, early 80s, who he passed. He was sleeping in a room outside, and a pool heater had a faulty exhaust pipe, and the exhaust went in to the pool house, and he succumbed to the poisoning. So the public has been very much aware of them. There was a case in 2008 around the time that Amanda Hansen passed in Buffalo in Aspen, Colorado, where a whole family who was vacationing in Aspen was killed due to poisoning by CO in the house that they were renting. So it's really come to the forefront.
Until this point this year, regulations primarily applied to homes, right?
Exactly. Because, you know, most of the instances were due to basement furnaces or hot water heaters. So the homes were the main focus of intention. And as a matter of fact, Amanda Hansen's parents got the Amanda's Law passed in New York State in 2010. It was a record of 6 months before that legislation wound up going through both houses of the state legislature, and it had bipartisan support. It was the quickest legislation that was passed at the time. That's how important the legislators felt this CO legislation was.
So describe the laws that apply to homes right now. What is required?
Amanda's Law is the law of the land in New York State, and new construction homes after 2010 were required to have what we call CO alarms. Those are hardwired alarms connected to your electricity in your house. Homes that were built prior to that, they allowed the use of battery-operated CO alarms. So that is the regulations now. The recommendations is to put one on every level of your home, also one in or outside of your bedrooms, and one by any fossil fuel-burning appliance, but not within 10 feet of it.
What are some of the newer regulations that have been adopted or that are in the works and probably will be adopted soon?
Well, the state, the commercial aspect of CO poisoning was not brought to the forefront until the tragic death of Stephen Nelson in Legal Seafoods. And right now, the state has a few bills up in Albany. Carl Marsiliano, I believe his name is a state senator from Nassau County. His bill is one of the primary bills up there. And they're working on a bill to require CO detectors in all commercial residences, all commercial buildings within New York State. Amanda's Law only covers residences, and it only covers residences that have attached garages or fossil fuel burning appliances in the residences. The commercial bill will cover all buildings, no matter if they have fossil fuel burning appliances or not. waiting for the carbon monoxide legislation in the state. Nassau and Suffolk County has been very proactive in passing this legislation. The concern is for the public that visits these buildings that could suffer from acute poisoning, which is poisoning within a 24-hour period, but also very important workers who work in these buildings and could be exposed to chronic CO poisoning, which gives you initial flu-like symptoms that can happen over an extended period of time. So Nassau has a law that covers the county. Hempstead also, the town of Hempstead has a law that covers just places of public assembly. The town of Brookhaven has legislation that requires CO in commercial occupancies would require them in any commercial occupancy that they have a jurisdiction over. And also the county, the Stephen Nelson Safety Act was passed that covers county-owned and leased buildings. The state has a larger jurisdiction, and we're waiting for that state legislation to come through because, for example, public schools are not covered by any of these county requirements. They're the jurisdiction of the state of New York. So, and I don't know what they're doing, but, you know, their laws can only be voluntary compliance, from what I understand, rather than mandatory compliance.
So how come commercial properties were largely exempt from regulations until now?
I think it's, really CO poisoning and CO alarms are relatively new, a new factor in our whole industry. The first regulations came out just in Chicago in 1992, you know, so we haven't had that much of a track record on it. And unless something happens, tragically, it takes more than, it takes at least one event before people can realize that that can harm them. And we're starting to mature in our industry as well as getting better types of detection to detect carbon monoxide earlier, but it was just overlooked because an incident didn't happen that was a rallying cry behind it.
I think maybe we're starting to realize as well that carbon monoxide poisoning doesn't just happen when you sleep, as in what happened at Legal Seafoods. It can happen while you are conscious and you're at work.
Yes, that's a very good point. The sleeping was the mode before the Steve Nelson, passed, and now we're understanding that on the day-to-day life, you can also experience a lot of CO exposure.
Since the mall tragedy, your company has been offering free presentations on CO safety and how to comply with these regulations, especially all these new ones. Tell us about these presentations.
Yes, we have a PowerPoint presentation. It's about an hour long. It goes over the basic proponents of CO, how it affects the body. We have some graphic presentations that will make it easier to understand. It's a generic presentation, Donna. We don't advocate any particular manufacturer. We just go over the different types of detectors that are available. We go over what's required by the local jurisdictions, and we answer any questions that the audience may have. And this is free and available to any groups.
Who can request one of these presentations? Any group?
I think it's best served by chambers of commerce or any local, homeowners group would be more than glad to go over. We can gear the presentations toward residential or commercial interests. Either way, all they have to do is call our number, 631 area code 864-8666. They could ask for our Director of Public Relations, Denise Rueda, and she will be more than glad to set up a presentation. It's entirely free of charge.
You also have a program to provide home CO detectors for people who maybe can't afford them. I believe you run that in conjunction with local fire districts?
Yes, Donna. In Suffolk County, we instituted something called Just One Life, and we work through local fire districts. We're trying to get CO CO detectors installed in homes of people who maybe can't, through different reasons, cannot get a CO detector installed on their own. They could be elderly. They could be infirm. We don't want to just hand out detectors, because too many times when I was a firefighter, I'd go to CO call and I'd find the CO alarm still in the plastic on the workbench in somebody's house. You know, or we found sometimes when we just gave CO detectors away, they wound up going back to Home Depot and getting a credit for the CO detector. So we want to make sure that those CO detectors find the home and that they're installed. Even if we give them to residents, we put the batteries in, so if they go on the workbench, at least they'll go on the workbench working.
Right.
And I feel that if I can just save one life by doing this, that it'll be worthwhile. And it's part of Briscoe's corporate responsibility and give back to the community.
All right, so let's get back to the basics for a moment before you go. I'm sure your number one advice to anyone is to make sure their homes have CO detectors. You said before they should be on every level of your home and inside or directly outside the bedrooms?
Yes, that is definitely the case. I would also recommend a CO monitor be installed in the house. The CO monitor really works for low-level carbon monoxide detection. UL's requirements for carbon monoxide detection, they have different levels at which they detect carbon monoxide. Let's take it for instance. In Call Place, Long Island, an advanced medical technician was going in to get a cup of coffee at a Dunkin' Donuts. I don't know if you remember the situation. But he was waiting online, and he had a portable CO detector that he bought voluntarily. That CO detector read 35 parts per million. When he saw it go off, he immediately vacated the premise and called the fire department. They responded and found that there was a blockage of one of the exhaust vents in the kitchen area. Now, unfortunately, with the detectors that they have today, they can't detect levels that low. So these CO monitors alert you at a level below 70 parts per million, which is the first degree of alarm with a UL-listed detector. So I think it's very important, because we don't know how long that condition even existed and those workers were exposed to that, or the general public was exposed to that level of carbon monoxide poisoning.
Now, when we're buying CO detectors for our homes, does it matter if it's battery-operated or plug-in? Is one better than the other?
Well, the best type, if you can afford it, is to have a system detector where all the detectors are interlinked, and they also send the signal to a main control panel and also to a central station to alert the fire department of an emergency situation. However, if you cannot get that type, the household-powered ones, they're called alarms, and they can be put in with battery backup, and that's a very good way of doing it. But I would not just use that. I would also put in a CO monitor for low-level carbon monoxide exposure. Because as I said, none of those CO alarms or detectors did not go off until the CO in the air, it reaches 70 parts per million, and it's over time. The low-level monitors will let you give the earliest warning, and it won't really produce an alarm, but it produces an alert to alert you that you may have something that's clogged, or to call a service person, or to further investigate the situation.
All right. Now, for those of us who don't have the whole house hardwired system and one of our carbon monoxide detectors does go off, what should we do?
I definitely... the most sophisticated instruments for carbon monoxide detection is on the premise of the fire department company. So I would call the local fire department, if you do have a CO alarm. That's definitely the first thing that you should do. And then, make sure you have the biggest remedy for CO poisoning is air. So if you get oxygen in your premise, you'll be able to dissipate that carbon monoxide. So I would open any windows or door you can until the fire department comes, and their meters can go a long way in determining where the source of the leak is.
If someone wants to host one of your free business presentations, perhaps at their local chamber of commerce, or they'd like to find out more about the Just One Life program, how can we do that?
You can do that simply by either emailing me at bobw@briscoe.com, or by calling us at 631 area code 864-8666 and ask for Denise Rueda, who was our Director of Public Relations.
And you also have a website, right?
Yes, it's www.briscoeprotective.com.
Bob Williams, President of Briscoe Protective Systems, thanks for joining us this morning and sharing this important information with us.
Thank you, Donna. It's been my privilege.